You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined as always by Rob Rang. Happy Tuesday to all of our listeners. Hope all of you enjoyed a nice three-day weekend being away from our podcast. We are going down to three shows a week here for the next few weeks as we're in the middle of the offseason. The Seahawks have a six-week break until training camp starts. We promise five shows a week will be returning here soon in the near future. For today's show, we're going to be looking at which offensive players face the most pressure to perform going to 2021. And we'll continue our 90-player countdown with numbers 27, 26, and 25. Let's get rolling. This show is brought your way by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Storylines revolving around the Seahawks this offseason has been the status of Aldon Smith, the veteran pass rusher signed with the Seahawks a few months ago. And it was a deal that had been in the making since the beginning of the new league year. There were some complications that prevented the two sides from agreeing to a contract. Eventually, they were able to work through things, and Smith signed a one-year deal. Within a couple of days, though, unfortunately, Rob, legal issues strike again, gets arrested in Louisiana. He's going to be arraigned this week, so there's still a lot of details there that we don't know a lot about. But Pete Carroll last week did indicate that even though Smith did not participate in OTAs or mandatory minicamp, he was at the team facility and he was doing some stuff, getting himself back into shape. And so it sounds like Carroll is somewhat confident right now that they're going to have Aldon Smith available at some point during training camp. There's obviously a lot of moving pieces here, though, especially when you consider his checkered past.
There are a lot of moving pieces, Corbin. You're absolutely right about that. I mean, let's face it. This is a player that was suspended for four NFL seasons, and he's now 31 years old, as you just mentioned, with the latest issue in Louisiana. There are some complications here, but Aldon Smith is a ridiculously talented football player. I think anybody who remembers just the way that he took the NFL by storm those first couple of seasons in San Francisco. He was just absolutely a difference maker for them. And we've talked so much about the impact that Carlos Dunlap had on Seattle's pass rush. I'm a big fan of Carlos Dunlap. He is not as physically gifted as Aldon Smith is, even at this age. The fact that he had five sacks after, last year with the Dallas Cowboys, after, again, missing the previous 4 years off of NFL suspensions, really is an indication of just how talented he was. And at times, the Dallas Cowboys were basically, just Aldon Smith and everybody else, because they struggled with injuries a year ago as well. So, I just go back to what the player that Aldon Smith was when the San Francisco 49ers drafted him out of Missouri. He had one season, Corbin, where he started all 16 games. And that year, he racked up 19 and a half sacks. I mean, just absolutely mind-boggling numbers. So you understand why the Seahawks are willing to give this young man an opportunity, because he is ridiculously talented and playing at a premium position. But yeah, I think that the Seahawks have to be cautiously optimistic, but cautiously is every bit as important as the word optimistic in that phrase when it comes to Aldon Smith.
And we've talked time and time again, and I can say this after seeing this defensive line, most of the players in action at OTAs and minicamp a week ago, this defensive line, they have stockpiled a lot of talent, a lot of unique pass rushers in the interior and on the outside, players that complement one another well. They don't have a lot of repetitive skill sets, and I feel like Aldon Smith would be another player that would add some uniqueness to this rush, because he's got a big, long frame, still very athletic, a relentless motor. There's never been a question about the motor when he's been on the field. The issue has just been keeping him on the field, because he's had constant issues away from the field. He's had domestic violence disputes. He's been arrested for substance-related issues on numerous occasions. He's been suspended several times. That's why he ended up having that four-year suspension, because He just could not get out of his own way. And we unfortunately see this with a decent amount of frequency in the NFL. We're talking about star players. There have been plenty of star players over the years that have battled a lot of these same issues. And so you hope that he's able to turn the corner, and he made an incredible comeback last year playing for the Cowboys. You mentioned the 5 sacks. He had 14 quarterback hits last year for the Cowboys, returned a fumble for a touchdown. I mean, it was a remarkable comeback story considering he'd been out of the league for so long. Usually if you're out of the league for a year, it's difficult to get back in, let alone 4, but that's the type of athletic freak that Alden Smith is. And even though he's not going to be a starter for this team, if you're able to put him with Carlos Dunlap, Alton Robinson, Daryl Taylor getting some reps over there at the Leo position, you're going to be able to just constantly rotate players, Benson Mayoa as well. I mean, they're going to have an incredible amount of depth at that position where they're not going to worry about somebody playing too much. Those guys are all going to be playing 110% all the time because they can just keep shuffling guys into the lineup. And so having him available obviously would be a big deal for the Seahawks pass rush going into 2021 and just take them another step up the ladder in regard to being one of the more well-rounded pass rushes in the NFC.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I think that it could be one of the best pass rushers in the entire NFL. You know, last week, Corbin, we talked about the idea if Seattle was going to be able to pull off a trade for, say, a Stephon Gilmore and previously for a Julio Jones and things like that. If the Seahawks get Alden Smith playing the way that Alden Smith can, they may not have to pull off any type of significant trade to be one of the true Super Bowl favorites coming out of the NFC this year. I, you know, again, with all due credit or all due respect to the GOAT, to Tom Brady a year ago at Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it wasn't just Brady and that offense that dismantled the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl and, you know, and basically took on all comers in the NFC. You know, it was that defensive line that really stepped up down the stretch. I mean, Ndamukong Suh, Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaquille Barrett, you know, that type of different flavors, so to speak, along the defensive line. That's exactly what Seattle is building here. I love that you mentioned all of the different types of pass rushers that Seattle has. And that's just focusing on the outside. I mean, of course, when you have guys who are built as differently as, say, Puna Ford, and we talked about the kind of unexpected pass rush ability that Brian Monet showed a year ago. I'm still very, very high on Rasheem Green, and we saw the improvement from LJ Collier. I mean, I just think that this is as varied and as gifted of a pass rush, at least on paper, as Seattle has had since at least their Super Bowl seasons, and perhaps even going back further than that. It really is a very talented and gifted group. Excuse me. And so I think that's one of the reasons why that Seahawks fans should be very excited about where this 2021 season could wind up.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens with Alden Smith. This is very similar to Quentin Dunbar's situation a year ago where the Seahawks are waiting this out. Obviously, if he ends up serving jail time or receives a significant punishment for what happened in Louisiana, the NFL has the ability to give him a suspension, even if charges are cleared because of his history and the fact that he's been suspended multiple times from the league. I could see the league stepping in and disciplining him in some regard. So we don't know what is going to happen here. Again, Pete Carroll sounded somewhat optimistic. There was some guarded optimism there about him being available to practice in training camp. We'll have to see where things are at, though, a month from now. There's a lot that's going to be figured out in regard to his legal case during that time. And if they're able to have him, he can take this pass rush to another level. They have built enough depth, though, if he's not able to play, that they should be fine without him. When we return to the second quarter, looking to the 2021 season, we're going to be doing this the next couple of days. We're going to start on offense. Which offensive players in the Seahawks have the most pressure to perform in the upcoming season? Rob and I will be giving our picks, and we'll be sharing a few of your listener picks as well when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, signing bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, as always joined by Rob Rang. We're 1 month away, roughly, from the start of training camp, so the 2021 season will be here before we know it, and that means it's time for our annual Who's Facing the Most Pressure discussion. We're going to start on the offensive side of the football today. Which Seahawks on offense have the most pressure on them to perform this year and help Seattle reach their goal, as we know, to get back to the Super Bowl? I'm going to start with you, Rob. Looking at this offense, tons of talent at the skill positions. They upgraded the offensive line by bringing in Gabe Jackson. They retained most of that group from a year ago, a group that I think was better than maybe portrayed by Russell Wilson's comments earlier this offseason. But a lot of really talented players in this offense. Which player do you think has the most pressure to perform and succeed heading into 2021?
Well, you, as you're explaining that, Corbin, you mentioned Gabe Jackson. I think that anytime you have a player that is coming into a new environment, then you have to kind of focus in on them, especially if they have been hyped up a lot. And Gabe Jackson certainly has. I'm actually going to focus in on a different player, however, that hasn't been quite as hyped up as I think that he should. I really think that he is going to lead to a little bit of a revolution at the position in this year. And it's because of guys like me hyping up Gerald Everett and his familiarity in Shane Waldron's offense, and the fact that I do think that the tight end position is one that Seattle is going to very much try to feature more. I'm going to mention Gerald Everett. I think that this is a player who has not yet experienced the type of success in the NFL that his skill set suggests is possible, that he has so much talent around him now in Seattle's offense. And I don't mean that to any lack of respect to the Rams previously, but Jared Goff is not Russell Wilson. And the Rams struggles, a little bit of a turnstile they had at the running back position, is not the same type of focus that Seattle has used with Chris Carson, their downhill rushing attack. It really should open up a lot of opportunities for Gerald Everett, who, of course, is only signed on a one-year kind of prove-it type of deal. And he has put that type of pressure on himself with that one-year contract. So I really think that there is an awful lot of pressure on Gerald Everett to come into Seattle and really help the Seahawks make the tight end position one that defenses have to focus in on.
And Pete Carroll ended up putting a cherry on top in terms of pressure last week on ESPN 710, saying Everett was going to be the breakout player in his opinion. But obviously he's been the number two tight end with the Rams. So the opportunity now to maybe be the guy in Seattle, and the fact that he does have the familiarity with Shane Waldron's offense, he gets a quarterback upgrade with Russell Wilson throwing to him. There's a lot of reasons to believe a big season is coming for Everett, but with those expectations comes plenty of pressure. For me, I'm going to go to the offensive line with the one position that I think everyone going into free agency believed the Seahawks were going to find an upgrade at, and that's the center position. I'm going to go with Ethan Posick because the Seahawks are putting a lot of faith in a player who, up to this point, was he a serviceable starter last year? Yeah, he was middle-of-the-road starting center. He did better in pass protection, I think, than was expected of him going into the season. He finished in the middle of the pack. Run blocking is still not an area that he's in the top, third or top half. He's in the bottom third of the league in terms of run blocking. So that's an area that still concerns me a little bit for Ethan Posick. But you consider the opportunities that the Seahawks had potentially to improve that position. There were some quality free agents like Corey Linsley. You look at the money that he got from the Chargers. You still got to wonder, could the Seahawks have made that work? It would have changed some of the other moves that they ended up making, but the money was potentially there for them to sign a player like Corey Linsley, and yet they bypassed free agency completely at the center position. re-signed Posick. They brought back Kyle Fuller. So basically, they're keeping the band together at that position. They haven't made any significant changes. And then in the draft, they chose Dwayne Eskridge instead of going after Oklahoma's Creed Humphrey, Wisconsin Whitewater's Quinn Miners, the two top centers that were available on the board that were still there when Seattle picked in the 60s. And so those are decisions that if Ethan Posick doesn't make the leap that Pete Carroll and John Schneider believe he's going to in his second season as a starter at the center position, those are choices that they could look back on with great regret, especially if Humphrey and or Miners end up having really solid rookie seasons and look like they're going to be franchise centers. If that happens and Seattle didn't take one of those players, and this is not a knock on Dwayne Eskridge. I think he's a fantastic player, and I liked the pick a lot. And I thought that third receiver was a significant need for Seattle. But going with Ethan Posick on another one-year deal instead of drafting one of those two players or signing a free agent when there were plenty of options out there, that is a significant roll of the dice. And so I think there is a lot of pressure on Posick that if he doesn't make the leap, if he doesn't improve the way the team envisions that he will this year, then it might be a game changer in terms of their ability to be able to compete for championships. And at worst, if Russell Wilson's under duress and in part because Posick's doing a poor job, then now you've got number three upset again going into next offseason. We got to play this all over again.
Yeah, exactly. I think that you articulate pretty well. I mean, and Seattle had so many opportunities to be able to bring in some type of real competition for Posick, or perhaps even a replacement. The free agent route, the draft, it was one of the strongest rookie classes of centers that I've ever seen over the last 20 years, Corbin. So I really expected that Seattle was going to go that approach with at least one of their draft picks. And of course, they did not. So that is a statement about their confidence in Ethan Posick, but as you said, it's only a one-year deal that they gave him. So there is incredible pressure for all the pressure that I just mentioned about Gerald Everett on his.
He's playing for his future too.
Exactly. And so that's the thing. So I think that that is a significant factor, especially when we consider the defensive lines that Ethan Posick is going to have to be, facing this season. So yeah, I think that that was a savvy move, but I know that there's some listeners who also point out some offensive linemen. And you mentioned that if Russell Wilson is getting hit a lot this year, then he's going to be even more upset in this upcoming offseason as he was in our current offseason, and how much pressure that puts on his center. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Russell Wilson himself. As one of our listeners, Joe McKenna, said, and his quote was, "No doubt Russ has the most pressure on him after his second half of the season in 2020 and then spouting off in the offseason." I think that Joe, again, explains that pretty well. I agree. I think that anytime you have a player who made the public comments that Russell Wilson says, that he commands the salary and the portion of Seattle's salary cap that Wilson does command, I think that all of those things, those are all tied into how much pressure is on number three to get back to his third Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of pressure on number three going into this season with everything that played out. And I think at this point, the franchise and the players seem like they're in a pretty good spot despite everything that happened over the past several months. But at the same time, we know Russell Wilson is the ultimate competitor and he wants to win. So he can't play like he did the second half last year. That was arguably the worst 8-game stretch that we've seen from Russell Wilson his entire NFL career. So with Shane Waldron now calling the plays, they've got that new OC. They've added another weapon or two weapons. They've added Eskridge and Everett. They've got Chris Carson back. They upgraded the offensive line with Gabe Jackson. You can't make excuses anymore. You've got to go out and you've got to play in an MVP level. And if he's able to do that, then this team can absolutely compete for a Super Bowl. But he's got to rebound from the way the last 2 months played out last year. I expect he will, but there's plenty of pressure that he has put on himself with the way that he handled this offseason. Another listener, Michael Hendrickson, this is one that we got a lot for this particular player, and it's not surprising. We'll be talking more about him even in the third quarter. He says, "Rashad Penny is under the gun. His opportunity to make an NFL franchise in the future will be determined this season." He is facing a critical year after they declined his fifth-year option and only played in 3 games last year coming off a torn ACL.
Yeah, I mean, he is – I think there's as much pressure on Rashad Penny as there is on any player on Seattle's roster. I think that that's a really good point by Michael Hendrickson here. At the same time, I also wonder how much opportunity is he going to get. Let's just assume that he is 100% healthy. Still, Chris Carson is the guy. So all the other players that we mentioned so far, Corbin, I really think are expected to be the guy, especially with a player like Russell Wilson. Of course, you're expecting him to compete at an MVP caliber level. With Rashad Penny, I think that the pressure is intense because, as our listener Michael Hendrickson mentioned, it's not just about this season. It's about the rest of his NFL career. And so that's a fascinating conversation just in and of itself. Rashad Penny has a great deal of pressure on him to return and play well this year, but even more so, he has to make sure that he is healthy. If the young man, and I do stress young because he's still what, 25 years old, he still has to prove that he is going to be healthy for the long term and hope to be able to get that second NFL contract, whether it be in Seattle or elsewhere.
And our last one here from Martin, this maybe was the one I found most interesting because I think he makes a compelling case here. He says Brandon Shell, he ended last year poorly while being hurt, and he's playing on the last year of his deal. We need protection over there. So we've talked about the offensive line. I mentioned Ethan Posick. Brandon Shell, like Duane Brown, is entering the final year of his contract. And while he did play well in the first 10, 11 games of the year last year, that injury definitely impacted his play. He's got to be able to stay healthy. He's had a few injuries earlier in his career with the New York Jets. So it is worth wondering, is he going to be able to stay healthy for 16 games? And, oh, by the way, we've talked about this a few times. Cedric Ogbuehi played really darn well at the end of the year last year. And these two guys are roughly the same age. So this still might be a somewhat open competition, even though Shell, I expect to be the starter. Ogbuehi is going to be ready to push him. And he improved his stock a little bit with how he played last December and early January going into the playoffs. And so I do think that there is some pressure on Brandon Shell, especially with Russell Wilson's comments this offseason. Everybody on that offensive line is being highlighted right now. But I think Shell absolutely has pressure going into this final year of his contract.
Yeah, you know, the kids like to call it low-key. I think that, that Brandon Shell is a low-key great answer for this question, just because I do 100% agree with Martin's point. Just in terms of the way that Brandon Shell's level of play dropped over the second half of the season while he was struggling with injuries, we know that the Rams were able to bring back Leonard Floyd, who was truly a nemesis for Shell and for the Seahawks a year ago. And so I think that it's going to be a fascinating competition. And I would even mention those two rookies. We know about the draft pick Stone Forsyth, Senior Bowl executive Jim Nagy, former Seahawks scout, really was touting Jake Curran, the undrafted free agent out of Cal. Either one of those two players might also be able to push for a little bit of playing time. So I agree. I think Brandon Shell has an awful lot of pressure on him this upcoming season.
When we return to the third quarter, we're going to continue our 90 player countdown, numbers 27 through 25. A lot of cornerback flavor. We're going to be talking a lot of secondary here in the upcoming segment. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar. 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Continuing our 90-player countdown, again, we're now shifting to just doing three players per segment because Rob and I are blabbermouths, and five players was a bit too many. We are going to look at numbers 27 through 25. We just talked a little bit about this player in the previous segment, looking at players with the most pressure to perform. And I agree with you on Rashad Penny. I didn't necessarily consider him for that category just because I don't see him being a starter for this team. Now, Chris Carson, his injury history certainly could get banged up again, and then Rashad Penny is the guy. In that case, then absolutely there's pressure to perform. But as Pete Carroll noted, this is a critical season for Penny. We have seen flashes. The problem's been he hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's only played in 27 games in his first three NFL seasons. Last year, he played in three games at the end of the year, had very minimal production. Then he exited week 17 with cramps, didn't play in their playoff loss to the Rams either, was inactive for that game. So he's just been consistently out of the lineup and not available. It's been a major problem for the Seahawks in the running back position over the years. We remember C.J. Procise. Unfortunately, Rashad Penny is falling in the same category where when he's been healthy, we have seen a game-changing back. Those couple games he had against the Eagles and Vikings before he tore his ACL 2 years ago, he looked like the first-round talent that the Seahawks thought they were bringing in with that extra gear to hit home runs and get 50, 60-yard runs. It's an element they didn't have in their run game last year, but they haven't been able to count on him. And so this is going to be his last chance to really be able to play not only for his future in Seattle, but his future with other NFL teams, because if he isn't able to stay healthy, other teams aren't going to want anything to do with a player that's been injury prone and hasn't been productive. He has less than 1,000 rushing yards in his entire career, Rob.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the statistics are pretty ugly. You know, you mentioned 27 career games in three NFL seasons. What is even more alarming to me, Corbin, is the fact that each of Penny's three seasons, his play, his statistics, his availability has dropped. You know, when he first came into the league and then, you know, when Seattle drafted him in the first round, there was a lot of people who panned that selection in the first place. And he came into the NFL and he had in 85 carries. That's his career high. 85 carries as a rookie. Only played 14 games that year. The next season, he dropped down to 65 carries, only played in 10 games in 2019. And then, as you just mentioned, played in a grand total of three games a year ago, had a grand total of 11 carries. His production as a kick returner also has dropped since his rookie season. Now, obviously, a lot of that has to do with the fact that Chris Carson had taken over and he is the lead back in Seattle. But considering that Seattle invested a first-round pick in Rashad Penny, as talented as he is, and I was on board, this is a 230-pounder who's got legitimate 4.4 speed. That's a very unique combination, and he did not have durability issues at San Diego State or previously at high school. But there's no question that he has since. There's no question that he lacks the make you miss that a lot of NFL backs kind of rely on. He needs a little bit of a runway to really get going. And with Seattle having some of the issues they've had in their run blocking consistency, we kind of talked about that in the second quarter. And the fact that, again, that Penny just hasn't been able to stay on the field, then this feels like one of those big-time first-round busts for the Seahawks. So I would agree, going back to our second quarter, I would agree that I think that Rashad Penny has an awful lot of pressure on him. He needs to get back on track. If he does so, then I think there's going to be plenty of NFL teams out there who are very interested in bringing him back. This does not look like a particularly gifted 2022 running back class, so I think that there could be some interest in him. But at the same time, at this point, think Rashad Penny has to be considered one of Seattle's biggest first round reaches and busts during the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era.
And I still believe, I'm saying this after everything we've just said, I still believe that Rashad Penny can be a difference maker for the Seahawks if he can just stay healthy. We know that he's got elite speed at his size. We know that he offers the unique ability to be able to take a handoff any given play and go the distance. And the Seahawks don't have any other running backs that can do that. He improved as a receiver his second season before he got hurt. I mean, there's a lot to like about this player, but he just has not been available. And obviously, it doesn't matter how gifted you are if you aren't healthy. It doesn't matter. So he's got to be available. If he is, then you still have a very good 1-2 punch with two running backs in Carson and Penny that are very different from one another. And that's what the Seahawks are still holding out hope for. And if Penny can do that, then he can bolster his stock and potentially come back to Seattle as a backup or go somewhere else next year. There will be options, but he's got to play into those options because right now his future's looking pretty darn cloudy given the injuries that he's had. Next up on our list, returning for his third season in the NFL, Ugo Amadi's had an interesting first 2 years because he wasn't supposed to be a starter in either case, but he's ended up starting a lot of games because of injuries in front of him, and he's performed well. I thought Amadi was one of the bigger surprises a year ago because when Marquise Blair got hurt and tore his ACL in week two, we had been raving about Blair throughout training camp and their mock scrimmages. He was the training camp MVP, in my opinion. I thought that loss was going to be a backbreaker for this defense, especially considering they were already struggling with him in the lineup. But Ugo Amadi came in and really played well in the slot, didn't give up a lot of receptions, and had several pass deflections as the season progressed, was in on a couple of big tackles in the backfield. He does a lot of things really well. I don't know that he's elite at any one trait, but he is a jack of all trades, and he gives them a lot of flexibility depending on the opponent they play. I still think he's going to get quite a few snaps on defense, even with Marquise Blair being back. They're going to give some flexibility, those two players, to Ken Norton Jr. as the play caller.
I agree 100%. I really like Ugo Amadi's positional versatility, his instincts, his reliability and consistency. You know, it's kind of the exact opposite of what we just talked about with Rashad Penny. Ugo Amadi has been kind of a jack of all trades, on special teams as well. He has been able to make contributions, and he did that at the University of Oregon. He just isn't as tall, isn't as long as what Seattle has prioritized in the past. But, you know, his quickness is obvious on the field. He, after not having a single pass breakup as a rookie, Corbin, mostly playing a little bit of a backup safety, a nickel corner, and on special teams, but he had 7 pass breakups a year ago, which is, you know, really impressive in my opinion when you consider just how little that he played. I think that, as you said, when Marquise Blair went down, I think there was a lot of concern last year that who would be able to step up and be able to play that versatile role that Blair played. Amadi did that, and he did it at a high level. So I'm really intrigued to see if he is able to take his game up to a whole other level this year. I think everybody focuses in on guys like DJ Reed, Akilah Witherspoon, Trey Flowers, all these corners, and then at the safety position, Marquise Blair, and obviously Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Ryan Neal. You have so many different names out there, and Ugo Amadi is one of those names I think that doesn't get mentioned often enough. I feel very confident he's going to end up making this roster, and I think that there's a very good chance that he winds up scratching and clawing the same way he has his first couple of seasons and winds up becoming a starter for the Seahawks. And in a secondary that I think is being kind of criminally underrated by a lot of the national pundits.
I think that Amadi was one of the most overlooked reasons why the Seahawks defense picked it up in the second half last year. He gave them a stabilizing force at that slot cornerback position. And again, I don't know that he's necessarily great at any one thing, but he can do a number of things well. He can blitz. He's a really sound tackler. He's good against the run game. He plays with physicality for his size. You mentioned the versatility, the effort, the fact that he contributes on special teams. He's the consummate team player. And he's a guy that players want to play with. He's a good locker room guy. So he's got all of those things that he has on his resume that help him stand out. So I think he's a lock to make the team. I don't think that there's going to be any doubt about that. Now, as far as playing time on defense goes, They want to get Marquise Blair back out of the field. But again, I think there's going to be a role for Amadi. Depending on opponent, there will be teams that he matches up better in the slot against whoever they're playing than what Marquise Blair does. So again, it gives them some positional flexibility. I could even see both of them on the field sometimes together in dime packages. It gives that secondary a lot of different things that they can do to stop opponents. And that's a really positive development after the way things started last year. And sticking with the secondary here, number 25, we go from a third-year corner to a rookie corner of the undersized variety, Trey Brown. Still kind of surprised that they ended up picking a sub 5'10" corner with under 31-inch arms, because that's been so against what the Seahawks have done on the outside. But again, this is your DJ Reed effect. We saw how well Reed played in the second half last year, and Brown does a lot of things well that the Seahawks want at the cornerback position, despite the fact that he is smaller in stature and has shorter arms. He's a physical, aggressive corner with good ball skills. He hunts people down. He's a good tackler. Again, you and I have talked about this numerous times. That's almost the biggest thing they look for at that position. We want a guy that gets ball carriers to the ground. Trey Brown knows how to do that. And again, the fact that he never gave up more than 70 passing yards in coverage in a game playing in the Big 12 is a remarkable statistic to me. So I've liked what I've seen so far at OTAs and minicamp. We'll get to see what he does in OTAs when everything's going full bore and he's got to try to defend DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And that's going to be a different game than what we've seen the last month or so. But I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about this kid going into his rookie season.
I agree with you. I think that for all the reasons that you just said, his success at the big time college level at Oklahoma, just considering the level of competition that he faced, not only in the Big 12, but the fact that the Sooners are, you know, pretty much a perennial playoff contender. So they are going against the Clemsons, the Alabamas, the Ohio States of the world as well. And so that is about as much of an indication of how well the Trey Brown is going to be able to handle the jump in competition in the NFL. And in week in and week out, you're going to be going up against some elite wide receiver and quarterback combinations. The fact that Trey Brown was a four-year starter at Oklahoma, I just was kind of touting the seven pass breakups that we saw from Ugo Amadi in Seattle a year ago. Trey Brown had 31. Over his college career. And then I love that you mentioned just how important open field tackling is from a Seahawks perspective. I mean, and that is really where Trey Brown stands out. He is a very reliable open field tackler. He has the grit and tenacity and competitiveness. He's almost too competitive at times. He's almost too aggressive. That's really where I'm kind of curious to see how he performs in the preseason games, even more so than training camp and OTAs. Because as we've talked about, Corbin, of course, the defensive backs, really are in a disadvantage. They're not asked that. In fact, they're required not to really go after the ball or really mix it up with the receivers during these off-season workouts. But I'm curious to see how many flags that he generates because he does play with a different level of tenacity. I think it's going to wind up making him a really important part of Seattle's defense. I just don't know that he is going to be able to come in and hit the ground running just because, again, he does have some size limitations and it is going to be a little bit different for what Seattle has prioritized the cornerback position before. But in terms of just grit and tenacity, I think that Trey Brown's going to be a big part of Seattle's future.
And I'd be remiss not to mention the special teams aspect either. He's returned kicks and punts. He can go down and hit people on kick and punt coverage. So even if he doesn't win a starting job right away on the outside, he is going to find his way on the field in the third phase of the game. And maybe even down the road, slot could be somewhere that he plays as well. Pete Carroll wants to play him on the outside for now. But again, versatility is something the Seahawks covet across the board, especially on defense. Trey Brown's going to provide that for them. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski as he updates you on the latest news in every major sport in under 20 minutes. Follow the Locked On Today podcast in the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob as well at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we return for our Wednesday episode, we're going to flip the script and we're going to look at defensive players with the most pressure to perform in 2021 and continue our 90-player countdown with numbers 24 through 22. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks!